how to write or send a threatening letter. There's no way to patent methods of filing a lawsuit or how to persuade a judge or jury. So those parasites are completely immune to being threatened with patents in return. Even IBM can't make them cross-license. But IBM figures, well, if we have to pay these parasites, everyone else will have to pay them too. So IBM figures that it gets a net advantage from computational idea patents, and that's why IBM is lobbying for them so hard. There, in addition to these multinationals that find it usually easy to get a patent license, there are also certain software developers that find it particularly hard to get a patent license. We free software developers. You see, we can develop software, lots of powerful software, without any money, but we can't pay money without any money. Patent licenses usually demand a payment per copy, and we can't even count the copies. If someone offered me a patent license, but I had to pay 1/1,000,000th of a rupee per copy, I think I could afford it. The total amount of money is probably in my pocket. But I can't count how much I owe, so I can't fulfill the contract. Of course, the patent holder could make any terms at all. The patent holder could offer a license for a single lump sum payment. Then, in principle, I could fulfill the contract. But the lump sum is usually pretty expensive, like $100,000. If we have to pay for the privilege of serving the public, we're not going to be able to do it. So that's basically as much as I'll mention free software in this talk, because almost all of what I'm saying applies to all software developers. So that's the alternative of getting a license for the patent. What about overturning it? Well, in order to have a chance of overturning the patent, you need an argument to make. And that depends on facts from years ago. In effect, the dice were rolled way back then. And if they came out favorably, and if you can prove it, then there's an argument through which you might win the case. And then it might make sense to go to court and resist. But it's going to cost a lot of money. For instance, Qualcomm, a few years ago, was the defendant in a software patent lawsuit and lost, and had to pay $13 million, of which $8 million went to pay the lawyers on both sides. More recently, Kodak sued Sun for patent infringement on a bunch of very vague, hard-to-interpret patents, and Sun lost, and ended up paying many tens of millions of dollars. So the result is that an invalid patent is a very, or probably invalid patent, right, because until there's a lawsuit, we don't know. A probably invalid patent is a very dangerous weapon when it's pointed at somebody who can't pay millions to lawyers. So those are the three things you can try to do. Sometimes you'll be able to avoid the patent. Sometimes it'll be feasible to get a license. Sometimes you'll be able to overturn the patent. But each one of them depends on different factors, which means sometimes all three of them are impossible. And once that happens, your project is dead. Practically speaking, though, it's not well advised to go studying all the patents trying to find out which ones you're in danger from. And the reason is that if you knew about the patent, then you're considered to be infringing intentionally, and that means that the penalties are greater. So the legal advice is keep your eyes shut. Just go through your design, build your program, and hope you didn't step on a patent. But people used to ask me, other fields have been dealing with patents for decades. Why should software be an exception? Now, look at the absurd assumption that behind that question. The assumption is that all fields ought to have to cope with the problem of patents unless they can prove that they should be exceptions. It's like saying, other people get cancer, why shouldn't you? Well, as I see it, if a system causes so much difficulties, the burden of proof is on whoever wants to apply it to any particular field. But there is an intelligent question disguised within that foolish question. The intelligent question is, what differences are there between fields that are relevant for choosing good patent policy in each field? And once we see this thoughtful question, the answer is not hard to find. Software packages are more complex than anything else. I'm not saying harder, I'm saying more complex. You see, fields fall on a spectrum in terms of how each product relates to patents. At this extreme is one patent per product. That is the paradigm that most people have in their minds. That's how people think the patent system works. They imagine that if you design a new product, then you will get a patent on it and no one else has a patent on it. After all, it's new. Well, the thing that they're imagining is a relationship of one patent per product. That's one extreme. So then we can see the spectrum of a few patents per product, many patents per product, lots and lots of patents per product. So different fields fall at different ranges of this spectrum. At this extreme, well, that's the way it used to work in the first half of the 19th century. But in the field of pharmaceuticals, it continued to work that way in most countries until a few years ago. Because the patent would typically cover the entire chemical formula of a drug. So if you developed a new drug, then it wasn't already patented. And you would get the one and only one patent that would cover that drug. Well, even the field of pharmaceuticals has somewhat changed. Now it's possible to develop a new drug and find it's already covered by an existing patent on some aspect of it. But still, pharmaceuticals is not too far away from that extreme. Fields of physical and other fields of physical engineering are in the middle, and over here is software at the far extreme. Software packages are the most complex things in terms of numbers of parts that people design. Why is this? It's no accident. It's because in software we're designing structures out of abstract mathematical idealizations that have definitions. In fields of physical engineering, people have to cope with the perversity of matter. You might think you know what it's going to do, but it can surprise you. And so there's so many complications that come from this, and tuning little details of something to make it work can be very hard. Of course, pharmaceuticals are the extreme of that, where it takes years of testing in lots of people to tell what the pharmaceutical is really going to do. But in software, we just don't have to worry about those problems. If I put an if statement inside of a while loop, I don't have to worry that there'll be so much voltage drop through the while statement that the if statement won't get a high enough voltage and it won't operate. I don't have to worry that as this while statement repeats, the if statement will shake and it might vibrate resonantly and crack. I don't have to worry that it will vibrate even faster and produce radio frequency interference in other parts of the program. I don't have to worry about how the heat dissipated by this if statement is going to escape out through the while statement or whether the if statement will burn out. I don't have to worry that corrosive fluids in the environment might get in between the if statement and the while statement and eat away at the connection, and eventually the signals won't pass, or the voltage drop will be too high, or it will crack. And I don't have to worry about how. Supposing the if statement does burn out or crack or corrode, how I'm going to pull it out and put in a replacement. I don't have to design to be able to access that part. For that matter, I don't have to worry about how each time I build a copy of this program, I'm going to insert the if statement inside the while statement efficiently. If you're designing a physical product, you have to design it for manufacturability. And the constraints on what you can manufacture often limit what kind of product you can make. But with software, I don't need to build a factory for each different program, because I have an all-purpose factory. It's called CP. I just type CP and it copies whatever. I don't have to design how I'm going to copy this particular program. So there's so many problems we just don't have to worry about, and that makes the job easier. But the intelligence range of people in the software field, I presume, is the same as the intelligence range of people in other fields of engineering. So when you give people an easier job, fundamentally easier job, what do? They push their skills to the limit. If you make the task big enough, eventually it gets hard again. So that's why in the software field we can make bigger designs with more different parts in them. And that means we combine more ideas with less work than engineers in any other field. So the result is that this gridlock effect, where to design a useful product you're combining thousands of ideas and may run into hundreds of patents, is much bigger in the software field than in any other field. It's a completely different phenomenon. Because in the software field, the main job isn't having ideas, it isn't developing ideas, it's utilizing them in combination by writing large programs. And software idea patents obstruct the main work of our field. And it even means you'll have less ideas. You see, a lot of the new ideas in software come about as byproducts of having people that are developing software. You want to write a word processor? Well, you start using the various ideas you've seen, but every so often you'll have another idea, so you'll use your idea. And then other people will see it, and so people will have learned a new idea for word processing. So if you make it dangerous to develop software, we're going to get fewer ideas. In other words, an artificial scheme to encourage new ideas in software at the cost of making software development dangerous is self-defeating. And even if you look at ideas that are the result of spending money on research, economic modeling shows that in fields with incremental innovation, having a patent system can discourage research and thus retard progress. You can see this modeling in www.researchoninnovation.org/patents.pdf. I warn you, it's rather mathematical. So this system is self-defeating in its own terms. So if we were considering it as merely an economic issue, we should reject software idea patents. But they are not just an economic issue. Patents in most fields are just an economic issue, because in most fields, things are made by a small number of specialized companies, and the restrictions of the patents only fall on them. The patents don't directly restrict you and me. For instance, patents on automobiles. They affect automobile companies, but they don't affect drivers. But a software patent is a monopoly on performing a certain kind of computation. So they restrict every computer user directly. This is not a mere economic issue. Even if, and this is not so, but even if software patents were economically beneficial, they would still be unacceptable because they restrict computer users. Even the users can get sued. And this, of course, includes businesses. If India authorizes software idea patents, then every business in India that uses computers will be tied up in a new bureaucracy. Now, I'm not one of those people who says, let businesses do absolutely anything they want, all bureaucracy, all regulation is wrong. Businesses keep on showing us that they can hurt the public if they're not regulated, and that they're not regulated enough. Consider, for instance, Coca-Cola Company. Coca-Cola Company's plants in India are sucking up all the groundwater and making the people's wells go dry. And those people are poor. They can't buy the products of Coca-Cola Company. So they have to drink water from the river. They have to get sick. So because of this and other nasty things, there's actually a worldwide boycott of Coca-Cola Company. So whenever I'm going to buy any kind of beverage, I look and see if it says Coca-Cola Company on it, and if so, I don't buy it. See the site killercoke.org. So we need to regulate businesses, but this regulation makes no sense. Why should we tie up every business in India that uses computers in yet another kind of regulation that might drag them into court? So the idea is completely stupid. But you'll find that politicians don't understand this because they're not programmers. They've never had experience of being software developers, so they don't know what software patents would really do. And they fall prey to naive misinformation. The mega corporations come along and say, you should adopt software patents. It'll protect all those small companies from us. Yeah, right. If it were really do that, they wouldn't be in favor of it. Or they say, the U.S. is number one in using computers, and the U.S. has software patents, so India should have software patents too, and then it will catch up. Well, the U.S. was in the lead in deploying computers in society before it had software idea patents. Back in 1982 was when they were authorized by a court decision. So clearly, software patents are not the reason why. Or they say, if the U.S. has software patents and India does not, then the U.S. has an advantage. It's just the opposite. Right now, India has an advantage. You see, anyone in the world can get a U.S. software idea patent. Each country has its own patent system, but foreigners can get the patents too. So, and each patent system applies to activities in that country. So U.S. patents restrict activities in the U.S. They can be used to sue people in the U.S. But they can't be used to sue people for what they're doing in India. That's under the jurisdiction of the Indian government. So if the U.S. has software patents and India does not, that means that everybody, including Indians, can get U.S. software patents and attack us poor Americans at home. But Americans can't get Indian software idea patents and attack Indians at home. So that means essentially that Indians can be shooting their patents at us and we can't shoot back. Now, of course, the solution for this is for the U.S. to get rid of software idea patents and we will be safe too, at least from this particular danger. But certainly this is no reason for India to copy the problems of the U.S. If the U.S. has gang warfare in the cities, that doesn't mean India should adopt gang warfare in the cities. If the U.S. practices torture, that's no reason why India should practice torture. If the U.S. does not respect human rights and doesn't give people, imprisons people without trial, that's no reason why India should imprison people without trial. So India should adopt a wise, sensible policy that is good for software developers and users, and that is reject software idea patents. However, there's right now acute danger that India will authorize software idea patents. You see, the proposed new patent amendment would allow patenting combinations of software and hardware. Well, what does that mean? Practically speaking, if you're using a program, you're using it in combination with some hardware. It's true that you could hand simulate the program, but that's rather slow and not useful in practice. What would it mean to allow patenting combinations of software and hardware? Well, I've seen patents in the U.S. that say, we claim apparatus including an arithmetic unit, a memory unit, an instruction sequence unit, and means to perform this computational step and this one and this one and this one. So, what does that patent apply to? If somebody has a computer, a PC, for instance, and on it is running a program that does these computational steps, then together they make up all of these things. The arithmetic unit, the memory unit, the instruction sequence unit, they're all there, they're in the PC. And these computational steps are there, they're in the program. So this user gets sued. So although they say, they describe this amendment as authorizing, quote, embedded software patents, unquote. As far as I can tell, we have no reason to believe that it will not have the effect of authorizing unlimited software patents, including business method patents and whatever, because they're all carried out by certain computational steps together with certain pieces of hardware. Now, it surely is possible, if what they want to do is to patent only genuine physical activities, which might perhaps be carried out with the help of some computer programs, they can do that. In fact, a very similar distinction has just been drawn, well, it was drawn a year ago by the European Parliament. The European Union proposed a directive also saying that it would only apply to specialized combinations of hardware and software doing a physical thing. But when we looked at the words that they put in the directive to make this distinction, we found that it was full of loopholes, that in many different ways, the actual effect of that directive would be unlimited software idea patents. And a broad movement. When I say we, I'm talking about a broad movement including free software developers and proprietary software developers and developers of private use software that's developed for individual clients and user companies and economists and political activists who believe in just in general in not creating more monopolies. Altogether, we persuaded the European Parliament to amend the directive, and they approved a whole range of amendments closing all these loopholes. So, if the European Union were democratic and if the Parliament's decision became law, then we would have won. The European Union is not, in fact, very democratic. It has a token amount of democracy. The Parliament has a little bit of power, but not very much. So the battle's not over, but we just won a couple more battles. That is, the campaign is not over, but we've now won a few battles in it. We may win, or we may not. But that won't directly help India. You have very little time now to prevent India from making a terrible mistake. Secretary A.K. Jha said that the government is open to changing the words of the patent directive so as to that the words of what they wrote about software. And I and the people in Europe who have been fighting against software idea patents there, we can give advice on how to rewrite those words so that it will not authorize software idea patents. I've written to him, so far no response. I'm going to be back in Delhi the 14th and 15th, and I hope that I'll have a chance to do something to prevent this problem here. So thank you. So the best way to handle questions is if you write them down. You see, I have some hearing loss, and when you put that together with the distortion in this public address system and the unusual accents, unusual for me, that is, that you have, I'm not going to hear what you say most of the time. But usually I can manage to read what you write. So if you write questions down on paper, I'll answer them. Oh, there's one analogy I'd like to suggest that may help you explain this problem to non-programmers. It's an analogy between, and you can start writing while I'm telling you this, it's an analogy between programs and symphonies. This analogy is useful for this purpose because a program combines many ideas, and a symphony also combines many musical ideas. But you can't just take a software idea and drop it into a program. You can't just take a musical idea and drop it into a symphony. You have to implement it in each case. And how you implement it depends on the rest of what you're doing. So the notes that implement a particular musical idea in this symphony depend on all the other ideas. And they're different from the notes that implement the same idea in some other symphony, because the other ideas combined in the other symphony are different. And what makes, and of course, to make a good symphony, you need to choose a good combination of musical ideas, but above all, you have to implement it well. You have to write lots of notes and make them fit together harmoniously so that the overall impression is interesting music. So imagine if the governments of Europe in the 1700s had decided to try to promote the progress of symphonic music by adopting a system of musical idea patents. Any musical idea that could have been described in words could have been patented. So for instance, using a certain four-note motif could be patented, or a certain series of chords could be patented, or a certain rhythmic pattern could be patented, or a formal structure for a movement, or using certain instruments alone for a while the rest remain silent, or any idea that could be described in words. Now imagine that it's 1800 and you're Beethoven and you want to write a symphony. You're going to find it's harder to write a symphony that you won't get sued for than to write a symphony that sounds good. Of course, being Beethoven, you'd complain about this, saying it's a stupid system. And the patent holders would respond by saying, oh, Beethoven, you're just jealous because we had these ideas before you. So why don't you go think of your own ideas instead of trying to steal ours? Now, thus trying to suggest that Beethoven was a third-rate composer who couldn't have any ideas of his own. In fact, one of the reasons we consider Beethoven a great composer is that he had many new ideas. In fact, some of his pieces were considered controversial because of the new ideas that were used in them. But the reason that they became accepted is that he combined his new ideas with lots of old, already known ideas so that he could write something that sounded like familiar music, aside from that one new idea which eventually people got used to. That's why his music doesn't sound controversial to us. We got used to the new ideas. They're not new anymore, but they were then. Even Beethoven is not such a genius that he could invent music from zero in a completely different way and make music that people would listen to. Nobody is such a genius that he can do that. And nobody is such a genius that he could reinvent software from zero and make software that's useful for people. It has to be recognizable as software. It has to do the things that users expect it to do, or it doesn't matter how many good new ideas are in it because it's useless. So this analogy could help politicians who have never been software developers understand what software idea patents really do. Where is the source of income for the FSF? Actually, I'd rather answer questions about software idea patents, because that doesn't... This is not a free software talk. And the people who oppose software idea patents are not limited to free software developers. So in some sense, if I talk about free software here, what I'm doing is not... That would be pursuing a private agenda, which isn't proper. What do you think of defensive patents? If I get an idea and build a product, I run the risk of someone patenting this idea in the future and suing me. Well, in fact, they could anyway. If you publish the idea, then future patent applications become invalid. So if you then just keep the proof that you published the idea, that should help you with any future patent applications. Now, the reason why many companies want patents to defend themselves with is not in case someone else patents the same idea, is to defend them from all the other patents that everyone's going to have, right? That's when IBM says they do cross-licensing, that's defending themselves from patents in the hands of others. And that makes sense. The problem is if you're not a mega corporation, you'll never get enough patents to do the job. Suppose you start a small company and you have two patents, and one of them points there, and one of them points there. And then somebody over there points a patent at you. Your two patents don't do any good at all. They will not defend you. They will not protect you. They will not enable you to make him cross-license because they don't point at him. IBM can do it because IBM has thousands of patents. It has patents pointing everywhere. But this small company, which gets its two patents and hopes it'll be able to defend itself, well, it won't really be able to defend itself that way, but sooner or later some juicy target may happen to wander in front of this patent, and then the small company will take the patent which it got in the name of defending itself and use it for unprovoked aggression. So if your employer says to you, we need to have software patents so we can fight back if we're attacked, here's how I suggest you respond. I understand that we need software patents to fight back if we're attacked, but you may not be the manager of this company in 5 years. In fact, in 5 years or 10 years, it might have been acquired by some other company, and I have no idea who these patents would belong to then. So, please put it in the contract with me that the patents I help you get will only be used for defensive purposes, either self-defense or collective defense. They're both legitimate. And we'll see what the employer says. Have the discussion publicly in the company, not privately. 2, patents were brought to encourage companies to publicly disclose their ideas. Without a patent system, wouldn't a lot of ideas be hidden forever in trade secrets? Well, let's see. Would the progress bar be hidden as a trade secret? What about defining abbreviations? What about LZW? Some of the people involved in LZW were professors, and professors normally publish papers, as they in fact did, about their work. And it's not that hard to do reverse engineering. And GIF format could never have become a de facto standard even if not for the fact that it was published. So I don't think actually that there's, you know, theoretically that might be somewhat of a benefit, but in practice it's not. In practice, before there were software idea patents, people had ideas and published them. Now they have ideas and patent them. If something is not open source, how can it be sued for... I don't want to talk about open source. I don't do open source. I'm not in favor of open source. I think you might mean in free software. Something is not free software. How can it be sued for software ideas except for obvious things like features? Well, to some extent, in some cases it might be protected by this. If some idea is used inside, but you can't tell because there are various ways it might have been done, then it might be safe. But most of the things it does, people will be able to tell it does. Most of the things that are done in a program, they're done for a reason, and people can see the reason. Of course, if they suspect that, you know, if the patent holder has a reason to think that the program does this, he can go to court and say, I want them to show the source code to an expert who will check it over and see if they're doing this. So the court will not let that be a defense. It's mainly something just to avoid ever being suspected in the future, in the first place. You said that you would talk more about GZIP, but the story didn't have a happy ending. Well, I did talk more about, it's not more about GZIP, it's more about the LZW compression algorithm. That was used in Compress, and we replaced it with GZIP. But it was also used in PostScript, and there we squeaked by. And it's also used in GIF files, and there we failed. We tried to replace it, and we failed, because we couldn't convince people to switch. So that's what I was referring to when I said I'll tell you more about it in the future, later in the talk. Can double-click technique be patented? At this point, the simple idea that a double-click does something different from a single-click, well, yes, it could be patented. In Australia, they issued a couple years ago a patent on the wheel. The patent might be invalid, but it still might be of some use for threatening small developers that can't afford to fight it. How do you see Sun Microsystems latest throwing away a few of its patents to free software? Well, they didn't. In fact, they didn't do anything. They made an announcement as if they had done something, and when you read carefully, they weren't actually doing anything. They were just finding a grandiose way of talking about the fact that they had released Solaris as free software. So they were saying that if you use Solaris, Sun wasn't going to sue you with its patents. And that's all, or use the code from Solaris to do the same things it already did. Then Sun wouldn't sue you. And that's the full extent, which is what they had already said. So in fact, that announcement was an announcement of nothing. SCL Corporation holds the, quote, intellectual property rights, quote, to Unix OS. Well, of course, they use the term intellectual property rights to confuse you, to avoid being specific about what they're talking about. It's to fuzz up the issue. You see, they can't sue anybody for, quote, violation of intellectual property rights, unquote, because there's no such law. In order to sue somebody, they'd have to find some specific law that would authorize specific lawsuits under specific grounds. And when they say intellectual property, it's because they don't want to say what they're threatening you with. They say, we'll do something. We'll sue you over something or other. So they put in intellectual property as a sort of placeholder so that they don't have to make it clear what they're really threatening you with. But they can't actually sue you that way. If they really sue you, they have to be specific so that you can see whether you can defend yourself. They claim, they've claimed that, so this in fact has nothing to do with patents. As far as we can tell, SCO doesn't have any relevant patents. And the lawsuit is not about patents. They claim that IBM violated a contract with SCO. Now, I don't know if that's true. I've never seen the contract, and I don't know what IBM did in regard to that contract. So I can't possibly have an opinion about that. All I can say is that supposing they're right, the worst that could happen is that one piece of the GNU plus Linux system, namely the kernel Linux, would have to have some code taken out. But that would not be the end. It would not be a disaster. So I don't worry about it that much. What do I have to do to prevent India from software patenting as an Indian citizen? I don't know. talk to members of parliament. It's one idea. Talk to officials. You know, if 50 people go to Delhi and say, we're all software developers and we want to talk to you about this dangerous ordinance and dangerous amendment, they might have a conversation. I don't know. I mean, I'm a foreigner. So I am not the expert to ask there. You're going to have to find the methods that will work. That seems to be all the questions. So at this point, with so much work I have to do, I better get back to some of it. So thank you, and I hope that my speech enables you to take some effective action. Oh, here's one thing I can suggest. If you know anyone who's an executive in a company that uses computers, tell him about this danger and that he had better start talking to the government saying, don't do this. The larger the company, the better. You see, if they're not in the software field, they won't have patents on software. So they're going to be sitting ducks. So companies that use computers but are not in the software field, there could be all sorts of things that they're doing in their factories, in their websites, or in their accounting, or all sorts of things that they could get sued for. By the way, there's one useful example to show how many patents can affect a single program. I used to have to suggest that people look at their word processors and see how many features there are. Of course, there are hundreds of features in your word processor, most likely. And each of those features is at least one idea. Maybe there are several different possibly patented ideas in one feature. And then there are other ideas that you don't see. So there are thousands of ideas in your word processor. And we can expect it to be covered by hundreds of patents. But now there's actually one example. Last year, someone did a study and found 283 different U.S. computational idea patents covering computations found somewhere in Linux. And Linux, of course, is just the kernel of an operating system, the GNU plus Linux operating system. And I saw an estimate that it was 0.25% of the entire system. So if we can estimate the number of patents covering anything in the system by multiplying by 400, and we get around 100,000. But that's just an order of magnitude estimate. Nobody knows. The only such study that has ever been done was done for Linux, because it's a lot of work to do that kind of a study for one program. How has Emacs been affected by patents? Well, so far, we haven't been. That is, nobody's actually threatened Emacs yet. Of course, there was that patent on the abbreviation facility, but that one we had pretty obvious evidence against. Of course, that doesn't mean that parts of Emacs are not covered by patents. It just means we don't know and that they haven't threatened us yet. Maybe they think Emacs is too obscure. So I guess I will take leave now. Well, if I hear them. Oh, you don't? Oh. Well, your voice I can hear pretty well, so I guess I can hear your question.
Isn't the fundamental problem that, first of all, everything is controlled by the U.S. in terms of patenting?
No, it's not.
And the fact that the patents aren't, I mean, obviously, as you've mentioned, that they've not been analyzed pretty well.
No.